Oh, they are the men and the women of Damon Runyon novels, but they are real life indeed. The Billy Walters and the Jimmy the Greeks, the Dink Dinkinsons and the Alan Bostons, and there's the guy named Lem Banker. Oh, my goodness, they are the names that fill the ears of gamblers and gamblers in the know. If you've never heard of them, though, who are these sharp bettors, these professionals? And what are these squares that you speak of? All a language and all names that might be foreign to you, but not by the time you get done listening to this edition of the Everything Guide to Sports Betting. It's the EGTSB, the Everything Guide to Sports Betting. Ron Flatter, Josh Applebaum, with our lesson plan today to distinguish between the sharps and the squares. Okay, square might be a word we're not supposed to use, so why do we say professionals and the public? I mentioned the names of some professional gamblers who are of renown for various reasons. And Josh, when we talk about them and we talk about the pros, what does that bring to mind for you as a guy who, I don't know, maybe you consider yourself a pro, maybe you consider yourself straddling between that and you're just a really good public bettor? What do you think of when you start thinking of these names and sharps and squares?
It's a great question, Ron. I think, you know, again, today's episode is really just talking about terms that you hear a lot and you want to just, number one, know what they are, but you also want to kind of put yourself on the path to improving as a sports bettor. So, you know, we're going to talk a lot about sharps today, and who are the sharps? Those are the those big important names that you mentioned that everyone within the sports betting industry knows about. The Billy Walters, the Jimmy the Greeks. Those are your professional bettors. Those are your pros. Those are the guys who are your wise guys, for lack of a better phrase. But they're your sports betting experts, and really, who are they? Those are the guys and girls who have a long track record of success, who win at a very high rate. They have years or decades of experience in the betting industry. And really, you know, Ron, what's kind of important is that to be really considered a professional bettor, what that means is that you have no other job. You don't have a day job. You don't come home from work and bet on sports in your spare time. Sports betting is your only job. It's your full-time job. It's how you make your money. It's your only source of income. So I think kind of the goal today is obviously to describe, you know, different ends of the sports betting spectrum. I don't think it's just public on one side, sharps on the other. There's a huge in-between. And really, we all start off as what we would call public bettors, recreational bettors, casual bettors, average Joes. Squares is the term you hear a lot. But again, I think that can sometimes have a bad connotation of, you know, like you're talking down to someone. But I don't think it's that bad. I think we all start off at that point. But the goal is that along your sports betting journey, you slowly get 0.01% sharper each day, and you are just along the path of becoming, maybe you may never become Billy Walters, but you can slowly over time become sharper and become a better sports bettor. So we're going to talk the whole spectrum today, sharp squares, public pros, wise guys, everybody, and hopefully that'll kind of benefit our listeners, just kind of knowing along the journey, hopefully get sharper each day.
You mentioned having a big success rate. Now, when we talk about big success rate, you might have heard these guys out there telling you, oh, I'm 80%. I hit 90%. The hell they do. Would you like to go ahead and throw a little cold water with a real number in terms of what a big success rate actually is?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up to start the show, Ron, because when you talk about sharps, that's kind of just this mythic, you know, term of these guys are just hitting 100% of their plays. They're winning every bet. They're making all this money. They're wearing, you know, expensive suits, driving fancy cars. They have extremely attractive women on their shoulder. And you kind of have this just aura of what a sharp bettor is. But really, a lot of sharps, you know, when you're talking about win rates, we got to remember that in order to break even betting on sports, assuming standard minus 110 juice, that tax or commission, the big you have to pay the sports books, usually the, you know, 10 cents on a dollar, you have to win 52.38% of your bets in order to break even. So anything above 52.38%, assuming minus 110 juice, you're doing pretty well. Now, what's important is that sharps, in order to be considered a sharp, and really just typically in general, sharps are going to win at between a 55% and 60% rate, between 55 and 60% of their bets overall. Now, you would say on the surface, that's not very good. Like, why would I respect these guys? They're barely hitting over 500. You know, if I got a 55 or a 60 on a math test, I'd fail that math test. However, that speaks number one to, you know, how hard sports betting is overall, but also just, you know, the importance of, you know, sharps are not infallible, but that also doesn't mean that you want to bet against them, because we're going to talk about in a second, they have the respect of the sports books. When sharps get down, when they place a bet, they move numbers. So they're right more often than they're wrong. The sports books respect their action. But remember, sharps are 55 to 60%. Your best sharps in the world don't get much higher than 60%. Don't think of a sharp as winning 70, 80% of their bets. Really, that's just, I would say it's impossible. You can do it over a short period of time, but not over the course of a year or a long period. But again, 55 to 60, that's kind of where you, in order to be considered a sharp, your win rate would be over the long haul.
What does it take to be a sharp beyond the success? That is the end, but what is the means?
Yeah, so I think, again, you know, when you're a sharp bettor, and again, we got to stress that no one becomes a sharp bettor overnight. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of ups and downs. It takes a lot of experience and, you know, educating yourself and hanging around a lot of old wise guys who you can learn a lot from if they can rub off on you and teach you a few things overall. But kind of just some characteristics of a sharp bettor, Ron. You'll hear this all the time. Sharps bet numbers, not teams. So, Ron, if I throw that at you, they bet numbers, not teams. What does that mean to you?
Absolutely. It means if I see a game where I think the point spread should be maybe, three or four, and all of a sudden they're hanging it at over seven, guess what? I'm taking the underdog. I don't care what I think of the two teams necessarily. If I really think that's a 3 or 4 point game and they're hanging a seven, I'm taking that plus, baby.
And that's key. And that is really, really important, because sharps, when you get down to it, they're fearless, but they're disciplined. And they're kind of the opposite of a public bettor, where a public bettor, someone who loves betting on sports, does it for fun, does it for entertainment, they're betting based on their favorite teams, favoritism, bias, teams with the most star players. They're betting with their heart and not their head. Sharps are the complete opposite. They're betting based on value. And when they identify value, that's when they get down. It doesn't matter who the team is. It could be the worst, grossest, most losing team in the world. But if they are getting a good number or more than, and again, the other thing with sharps is they set their own power ratings. They set their own lines. A lot of them, what they'll do, Ron, is basically they'll have their own ways of setting their own power ratings, creating their own power ratings, then comparing them, like you just mentioned, to what the sports books are offering. So again, if they have a game where a favorite should be minus 10, the books are hanging minus 8, they're automatically going to bet that favorite minus 10, even if the public is all over that dog getting the points, it doesn't matter. So they're always looking at sports betting in terms of value, in terms of betting numbers, and trying to get good numbers. That's really, really important. You know, sharps also, they're typically going to bet big amounts on games, you know, large, big, you know, six-figure, five-figure bets, whatever it may be. But the important thing is that, you know, it's not strictly or solely based on the amount of money that a sharp is betting to make them a sharp. So a good example here, Ron, is if I told you Floyd Mayweather put $1 million on the Super Bowl, would he automatically move the line just because he put a ton of money down, Ron, or would something else happen?
Well, it depends, I think, on which way the betting is going generally among other sharps.
Yeah, I think that's key. And also, it's also important that, again, the amount of money, it's more of kind of your background overall. So the kind of the Floyd Mayweather thing is, you know, he could bet $1 million, but he may not move the line too much other than maybe the juice gets adjusted because he doesn't have a long track record of success.
He's not a sharp except when it comes to money only. So that really doesn't make him a sharp.
Exactly. So you could have a wise guy who bets, you know, $5,000 on a game, a much smaller amount, but the book knows that that's a guy who should be reckoned with, has a long track record of success. They may move that number more, even though it's a smaller amount, because of who it's coming from overall. So I think kind of the moral of the story here is that when you're talking about pros, Really, they're not just trying to pick the right side. They're also trying to get the best number overall. I think that's key as well. And they'll lay off. If they don't see value, they have no problem laying off and not betting a game. But if they see value, boom, they'll get down hard.
Yeah.
But the long and short of it here is that your sharps are your pro bettors. And these are your pros who really have a long track record of success. They're going to move numbers because they have the respect of the books. Whereas a public bettor or, you know, regular casual recreational bettors, they're really not going to move numbers because they're not, you know, operating with an edge or an advantage over the house.
There's that old line, that old saw, which is steeped in some truth, that the house really wants to have the money even up on both sides of a given game. But if you look at the reports that come out that the casinos will issue, some of them are reliable. Some of them you kind of wonder, okay, are they kind of bending the numbers here a little bit to help themselves? But by and large, you very seldom see games come out as 50% on one side and 50% on the other. I think this illustrates the point you just made, that the casinos are looking much more closely at the sharps than just the whole pile of money. But overall, it does address the question of whether sharps are on one side of a given game and the public is on the other.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ron. You know, number one, I don't think it's always the case that, you know, sharps are on one side, you know, public's on the other. They can be on the same side. They can be on different sides. It kind of depends on the game overall. But what you said is important because, you know, in a vacuum, the odds makers do want 50-50 action because then they have, like, no liability. They have no risk. Whatever happens, doesn't matter who wins or covers, they can just take in the juice that both sides had to pay. However, that's really not the case overall. You know, sportsbooks, they're going to kind of identify the sharper side where their respected players are coming in, and they're okay with the money being a little lopsided if they know that they're on the right side and if they know that they stand on the side that is really with the smart money. And again, smart money, you'll hear that a lot. Smart money is just basically the money coming in from respected professional sharp bettors overall. So again, the money can be lopsided where 60% are on one side, 40% are on the other. But if the house is on, you know, the 40% that they know is a little bit sharper, they're okay with that. Yes, they could stand to lose more if that 60% side comes in. However, you know, if they're on the side of the pros and they know that that's the side where the majority of the smart money is, it's okay that the betting action isn't, you know, 50-50 down the middle.
So as an individual gambler will set up in their own minds their power ratings and their own lines, of course, the casinos are doing that all at the same time. And at the end of all of this, you start to see where sharp money is going. Yet the public will fly in the face of it without fail. And look, I do it. We all have opinions. Opinions are like, well, you know what we all have one of. Josh?
So this is funny. You know, when you're talking about basically sharp action and in general, you know, you'll think about you want to be the sharp who moves the numbers, but we're not all at that point where we can be the ones causing what we'll get to in a second, steam move, reverse line movement, line freezes, late moves, all that kind of stuff. But you can learn to read line movement. And I want to stress this really, really, you know, really stress this today because learning to read line movement is going to tell you so much about where the smart money is, where the liability is. And if you can learn how to read line movement, a line opens here, it moves here. Where does it close? Where are the moves in between? That's going to give you so much information about where the smart money is overall. And you always want to be with the smart money. You never want to go against it. In general, you know, a lot of public bettors who bet based on gut instinct and bias, they love betting favorites. They love betting home teams. They love betting overs when they're betting a total. In general, a lot of sharp professional players will find a lot of value on underdogs.
Absolutely.
And unders and road teams because they're undervalued. You know, the public is going to be totally against them based on their bias. So you can get maybe inflated or better numbers overall just by kind of going contrarian a little bit and kind of buying the unpopular opinion overall. But one thing that you're going to hear a lot is a team getting steamed or steam hitting the market.
Let me ask you because there's various ways to attack that. The steam move, you got the reverse line movement, you got the line freeze. So let's start. When you look at steam, when we talk about steam, that's where the action is, the steam that moves the numbers. So in that respect, how do you attack that?
Yeah, so this is important. You know, a steam move is basically an overload of smart money coming from, you know, it could be syndicates, which are basically a bunch of different sharp bettors pooling their resources, kind of working together overall, betting big amounts across different sports books across the market. But a steam move is basically an overload of smart money all at once that causes the entire market to move. So you may hear someone or gambling Twitter or whatever, they'll talk about, oh, the Green Bay Packers, they just got steamed from -7 up to -8. So what does that mean? It means that a lot of professional bettors, sharp guys, wise guys, they got down really hard and bet the Packers at -7 and caused the whole market to move up to -8. So what's important with steam is that it's all about timing. And when you're talking steam moves, you know, if it goes from -7 to -8, the worst thing you could do is chase steam. Because if it's -7 to -8, you think, okay, exactly, Ron, you're late and you missed the number. And you may say, oh, it's good that I'm on the sharp side. The Packers are the side that the pros liked, which is good. But remember, pros aren't just picking the right side. They're picking the right number and the best number overall. So what that's telling you is the pros really liked it at -7. If you can now only get -8, you know, you're chasing steam. You're betting into a bad number. That's really not what you want to do because the value is then gone at that point. The key with steam is that if you have access to a live odds page, if you have access to multiple sports books, if you can catch a book that's slow before the steam moves, then that's when steam moves can be meaningful. Like if every book gets hit at -7 and you see your live odds page light up, the whole market is moving, and you can really quickly jump on a book that's still hanging a -7, then boom, you use steam to your advantage. You're on the sharp side and at the best number that the pros liked. But if you're -7, now it's -8, a whole point has moved, you're chasing steam, and really that's a losing bet long term. So steam is indicative of sharp action, but the key is getting it early before the line gets worse.
And you can see these lines move. There are pages like Don Best, or you can go to Las Vegas Advisors, places like that. Type those into your Google search, go to those pages, see how they go ahead and show those to you. Some might have a fee, some might not. And then you can see actually the line moves at multiple sports books at the same time. So you can actually monitor that. So, okay, so there's that. Now, there's also the reverse line move. So there's a counterintuitive quotient that comes into that.
Yeah, Ron, this is one of my favorites, reverse line movement. You also hear people kind of say RLM for short. It's basically when a line moves in a really weird direction that kind of doesn't make any sense. So the standard definition is basically when the betting line moves in the opposite direction of the betting percentages. It moves away from the popular side getting the majority of bets toward the unpopular side getting the minority of bets. So this is kind of a classic case of identifying smart money. Good example would be, you know, let's say 8 out of 10 bets are taking the Patriots, and the Patriots open at -7. Now, Ron, normally you would think heavy, heavy betting on the Pats or any team getting 8 out of 10 bets, you know, 3 out of 4 bets or more, typically they'd move -7 to -7.5, -8. The odds makers would move the line further toward the popular side because they have so much liability, they need to entice betting on the other side. However, sometimes you'll see the line actually fall and it makes no sense. If 80% of bets are on the Patriots at -7, why did the line just fall to -6? So on the surface, you scratch your head and say, what's going on here? Did the books fall asleep at the wheel? Did they make a mistake? What's going on? The key with that situation is that you had smart money come in. You had sharp action come in and basically bet the opponent. Maybe the Patriots are playing the Jets in that case, -7, and they fall to -6. What does that mean? It means that pro money, respected money, sharp action came in on the Jets at +7, which caused that line to drop. Even though the big majority of bets came in on the Patriots. So again, if it looks weird where, you know, the Lakers are a huge favorite, everyone's betting the Lakers, but you see the Lakers fall -10 to -8, -10 to -9, whatever it may be, that's a sign of sharp action on the opponent. And same thing with steam. You want to get on that number at that triggering number, at that, you know, opponent +7, Jets +7, not at 6. You want to get it before it falls. But again, these are signs of locating sharp action, which can really benefit you because you always got to know, where's the public, where are the sharps? Those are two questions that if you can answer, that's going to really help you toward making a smart bet.
What about a line freeze where it doesn't move when you know good and well there's money coming in?
Yeah, line freeze is another one. It's basically kind of a a different variation of a reverse line move. It's when you have heavy, heavy betting on one side, but yet the line doesn't budge. So, you know, everyone and their mother is betting Alabama football, the Crimson Tide at, let's say, minus 14, yet the line doesn't move. It doesn't go to minus 14.5, minus 15. It stays exactly where it is. That's kind of a situation where you're locating liability, where you're seeing that, okay, the books are really reluctant to move that line because they're more concerned about the opponent, giving the opponent an extra half point or a better number or whatever it may be. So again, always look at, you know, if a line is 9 times out of 10, the line will move further toward the popular side. If it doesn't, if it goes the other way, if it stays the same, that's when you want to, you know, it raises some alarm bells and you got to ask yourself, why aren't the books moving it further toward the favorite or the popular team? It's because they're more concerned about that opponent, which is likely getting the sharp action.
We know that sharp bettors, professionals, will bet early on a game, particularly if they see a bad line where they have an opinion and they have good reason to think, oh, they should bet a particular direction on that. But what about late line moves? What influences those and how should you act on them?
Yeah, late moves are really, really important, Ron, because when we talk about sports betting, it's always the genesis of a line. At the beginning, the limits are low. So the sports books, basically, they're only allowing a small amount of money relative to the overall market to be bet on a specific game. Because when it's early, you know, they still have to read. They're not sure. They don't want to put out a bad number that they could then get crushed on overall. So limits are low early. They allow sharps to kind of mold the line. Once you get closer to game day, further in the week, closer to tip off or kickoff or first pitch or puck drop, that's when the limits get raised and more money comes in. So I would always recommend to new bettors, you know, look at line movement game day, the last hour, the last half hour, the last 10 minutes before a game starts, because that's when the limits are highest. That's when basically your big bettors can bet really big amounts overall. So that last hour or so, when you see line movement, that can be really indicative of a sharp side, because that's when your big, big pros get down hard. So late moves, always very meaningful, because that's when your big pro moves are coming in.
All right, so how do professional bettors, how do the sharps grade how they've done both before and after the game?
Ron, pop quiz. What is CLV, a.k.a. closing line value? What does that mean?
Well, it's not just about winning your bet or losing it, but what you were able to gather based on line movement. Do I have that about right?
You're exactly right, Ron. Yeah, CLV, you'll hear this a lot, closing line value. It's not just that sharps and really all bettors, you should document your plays, you should track your performance, you should learn about who you are as a bettor, learn your strengths and weaknesses. But you're also going, you know, sharps really don't just lean on their win-loss record and their units won, units lost. They also lean on closing line value. So the whole thing with closing line value is you want to read the market correctly. You want to beat the closing line. You want to bet a game at a better number than what it closes at. You want to pay a better price than what everyone else has to pay when all is said and done. And that's really the mark of a sharp bettor, a successful bettor. Not only are you picking the right side, but you're beating the market overall. And this is important because luck comes and goes in sports betting. Sometimes the lucky breaks go your way, sometimes they don't, but that's part of the game. But the skill of reading the market and anticipating line movement, that's what's really going to sustain you long term. So, you know, when we talk about closing line value, good example. Let's say you bet the Chiefs at -3 and the line closes at -2. Ron, even if the Chiefs win by 14, 21 points, but you bet -3 when the line closed -2, would you still be happy about that even though you won the game?
Well, in the short term, sure, I'm going to cash the thing, but then I'm going to sit there and go, well, gee, I wished I had gotten it at 2, because at the end of the day, it determines how much you're sweating your bet, and it also determines how much you really know about that team and that game coming up the next time you go back to the window to bet the next opportunity they have to play.
Exactly. And again, it's all about what did you pay versus what did the line close at? So again, you know, let's flip it the other way. You bet the Chiefs -3, the line closes at -4. That would be a smart bet. That would be a good bet, because no matter what happens, the Chiefs could win, the Chiefs could lose, you beat the market. You bet them -3 when everyone else at the end had to lay a -4. So that would be getting closing line value. You beat the market by a full point. So I would just caution a lot of new bettors. Don't get into, you'll hear this a lot where, you know, it was a good bet if it won. It was a bad bet if it lost. That's not always the case. There's a gray area. If you can beat the closing line, you know, that's really the mark of a smart bet. You know, value is determined before the game starts, not after. The end result doesn't determine whether or not you made a smart bet. It was all about, did you pay a better or worse number than the overall market? If you can beat the closing line, that's really going to be set you apart and really, you know, kind of make you a sharp better and a successful better long term.
When you see Van Pelt and Stanford Steve going over bad beats, they'll often seize on the closing number. In fact, they generally will talk about the closing number. But where you bet it might not have been the closing number. It goes right to Josh's point about making a smart bet because that closing number might not be to your advantage. That's what bad beats are all about. So anyway, that certainly comes into play there. All right, so what can you learn from sharps? And what should you not do with your money before you even go to the betting window or touch your app? We'll talk about all of that coming up next on the Everything Guide to Sports Betting. Ron Flatter, Josh Applebaum, it's the Everything Guide to Sports Betting, a VSiN podcast all yours right now as we are teaching you things about sharps and squares. Okay, you can't learn so much from the squares. You can certainly learn from the sharps. And one of those is something we've talked about in another lesson that you might have heard already or might yet hear coming up, and that's bankroll management. Sharps are really good at that.
Yeah, that's the first thing we can learn from sharps, Ron. Even, you know, hopefully we learn how to win at a higher rate as well. But really the biggest thing is, you know, from the start, bankroll management. Sharps are very, very disciplined. They're going to be very strict with their bankroll management. They have basically they're fearless but disciplined. We mentioned that earlier, but they're fearless in terms of if they see value, betting numbers, not teams. If they see an advantage over the house, they have zero hesitation to make a bet no matter how terrible or gross a team may be. But they're also disciplined knowing that if I don't see value, I'm going to lay off overall. So strict bankroll management, limiting their bets only to the games that they see value on, knowing that it's okay to lay off if you don't have an edge. Not betting games just because they're on TV and we're bored and we want the sweat, Ron, even though we all think that way. You know, again, being able to lay off is important. And then different bankroll management strategies like flat betting, a disciplined approach long-term, you know, betting 1% to 5% of your bankroll per play, or a lot of sharps do Kelly criterion as well, weighting their plays based on kind of what their internal numbers and data in terms of win probability. If they see a bigger edge over a game, maybe they bet a little more. But learning from sharps just in terms of never chasing, never doubling down, grinding long-term, that's really kind of the mentality. And what I think is important is just sharps are super even-keeled. They never get too high. They never get too low. They know that, you know, they've been around the block. They know how hard sports betting is, but they also know that, you know, if you can bet with your head, not your heart, that's what will really, you know, separate you and hopefully win a few more bets over the long haul.
Yeah, don't martingale. If you've never heard the term martingale, it means basically take what you lost today and bet double that because the chances of you losing it again are thinner. And then when you lose again, you got to double it again. Yeah, you can be kicking that can down the road forever. Don't do that. All right, so with the internet, sportsbooks and bookmakers used to have an advantage beforehand because they might get information, and it was their living to get information that might not be available to bettors. But professional bettors push that envelope, and now with the internet, it certainly gives us a chance to see a lot more information out there. Josh, some of it's good, some of it's bad, and all of it can be overly influential.
Yeah, Ron, you're totally right. I mean, you know, we live, unfortunately, in an age of fake news where, you know, you really don't know what's real. And I know, Ron, believe it or not, there's a lot of noise out there. So it can be difficult to know what's real and what isn't, sadly. But I think this is important. And I think this is a good kind of, you know, wrapping up this episode is that sharp bettors, wise guys, pros, overall, they're going to be kind of very under the radar. You know, they're not really going to be out there touting their plays. And we'll talk about touts here in a minute. But, you know, their goal isn't to get clicks and get retweets and be popular. They want to win and be under the radar and unknown. That's really going to benefit them overall. But kind of when you're talking about the internet and the rise of the internet, What's great is that obviously, you know, people, everyone has a voice. Everyone can start a website. Anyone can start a Twitter account and, you know, post their picks and, have game recaps and breakdowns. However, this has really kind of hurt a lot of new bettors because this falls into the question of should you buy picks?
Yeah, so, well, that's the thing. Well, here's the thing I'm going to bring up right away on that. Guy who taught me horse racing years ago used to say about touts, if their picks are so good, why are they selling them? And if you see these guys coming at you with football picks, I guarantee you, if you call this number, pay me $50 or $100 right now, and I'll give you my five-star gold pick. And they'll, you know something? They are as oily as a broken-down car. They really are. And, Josh, go ahead. I just teed you up. Swing
no, you're fences. You're totally right because they're the used car salesmen. And really, they're kind of scammers, con men.
Kind of.
So there are some handicappers out there who do have, you know, again, we don't want to say it's 100%, you know, to anyone who does do a respectable job handicapping and selling plays, all the power to you. But the vast, vast, vast super majority are used car salesmen. Like we said, we call them touts, or I like to call them scambycappers. That's another term that New York Post Phil Mushnick coined in the 1980s. And he also Rick Riley had a Sports Illustrated expose in 1991. He called touts, in a world of cheats, cons, grifters, swindlers, carnival barkers, and people you would not want to change your 50 with, the brotherhood of so-called sports advisors is a gutter unto itself. So I always love that quote. And again, these touts and scamby cappers, their goal is to make money by you buying their picks. And again, if they were super sharp, they wouldn't need to sell their picks. That again, they're going to overpromise and underdeliver. And they'll use whatever they can to rope you in and rope in new sports bettors. And they'll use terms like, I have a 50-unit bomb. I have a guaranteed lock. And by the way, Ron, there are no guarantees in sports betting. Don't let anyone ever tell you anything is a lock. I know. Seriously, who would have thought? But they'll label themselves as advisors or experts or pro cappers. And they'll do whatever they can to make you buy a pick, to entice you to buy their plays. But really, they prey on a lot of new bettors, desperate bettors. So I would always recommend, you know, don't buy picks. Right off the bat, whatever the cost of the membership is, you're already in the hole. So even if whoever you're paying for picks from, they would have to do great even just to break even from what you already paid. But really, you know, sports betting, it makes sense you would want to buy picks from someone who's really good because I don't have to do any of the work. I can just sit back and win. But you're not going to get much out of that. You know, use that time, that effort, that capital into trying to learn on your own. You're going to get much more out of it long term. But again, you and I, Ron, are united in the fact of don't buy picks. And I think that's something early on that will really save you and really just avoid a lot of hassle from having to deal with touts or scamby cappers.
I'll give you another term here called east-westing. You'll see some of these touts show their picks and say, hey, these are the picks I had, and here are my wins and here are my losses. Well, east-westing is where they'll give one pick on a team at one location and then maybe to another client of theirs, they'll give the pick in the other direction. So no matter which way the game ends up, that they'll give themselves credit for the victory whichever way it turned out. That's called east-westing. So that's yet another way that these touts will try to claim, oh, yeah, well, I document what I do. No, you don't. No, you don't. All right. So now on the other side of the coin, people you want to listen to are the sharps, the real sharps. And Josh, I have found over time that while, you know, it's like anything else in life, you find some folks who, you know, the seven-letter word that begins with A and ends with E, but by and large, they're mostly nice folks who are fun to talk to and can't wait to talk to you, and you can't help but have some good knowledge rub off.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ron. And, you know, we want to know that and no matter what you're doing in life, hang around experts, hang around people who have been there before, learn from people who are wise and who have been around the block a few times. So the easiest way to learn from sharps is hang around a sports book. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to be able to, I remember I was at the Borgata for the Super Bowl, and I was sitting next to a bunch of older gentlemen. And I just started talking to them, and you know, we're talking about different sports, and right off the bat, you learn stuff. And I think what's important is that sharps are mythical, and you know, you have this in your head, this vision of what a sharp is, but a lot of times they're just regular cool guys. And if you can brush elbows with them, buy them a drink, and you know, listen to their stories. And I think what you'll find is that they're very open to teaching you a couple tricks or teaching you a couple things. And again, if you can hang around sharps, you know, also read books, you know, educate yourself. Again, sometimes it's hard to differentiate true sharps, you know, the signal versus the noise versus people who claim to be sharps but aren't. But pick their brains, hang around sports books. You'll be able to quickly notice that the sharps are not the guys, you know, making all the noise in the middle of the sports book screaming about their wins.
Right.
Usually they're off to the side. They're a little quieter, but that's because they don't care about the publicity and the spotlight. They're probably winning all their bets and they're just doing their thing. But pick the brains of sharps, hang around sports books. That's an easy way to pick up a few tricks along the way.
Here's something else I found out, in addition to the fact that you never stop learning in life, and particularly in sports betting. But sharps know that too. Sharps are always trying to, you know, they're always trying to get a little extra information. And if you have an angle that they haven't thought about, that you might get the aha out of them. Sometimes that's even more satisfying than winning a bet, when you know that that's somebody like, wow, I got his attention. But at the same time, you never stop learning. I think that's important to remember in this whole racket. And I think one of the things that you have to keep telling yourself too are some of those lessons that we keep telling you. And Josh, this is a long grind.
It certainly is, Ron. And again, you know, I think kind of we've talked about today's episode a lot about who are the sharps, what are their characteristics, what sets them apart. But just remember that sports betting is a long-term grind, and even the sharps themselves are learning more each day, like you mentioned, Ron. But kind of the goal is that the more time you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And we all start off as that recreational bettor, that's quote-unquote square bettor, that average Joe who's betting too much on every game, parlaying everything, betting your favorite teams, betting every favorite, every home team. But slowly but surely, the goal is not to become Billy Walters overnight, but just to slowly get 0.01% sharper each day. And really, that's what's going to make sports betting more fun. You're going to lose less, you're going to win more. But learning from sharps and just putting yourself on the path to becoming sharp. And really proud working at VSiN with you, Ron. You know, I think we do a great job of that. Highly recommend going to VSiN.com, following us on Twitter at VSiN Live. Our goal is to definitely, you know, help you along your journey, help you make smarter bets. And we also bring on so many different sharp bettors who will, you know, not tell you to buy a pick or bet this side, but they'll present reasons and data and stats and opinions. Then you can decide what you want to do.
Exactly.
Kind of just thinking for yourself, becoming sharper. That's the key, you know, in the end.
Yeah, you got to be careful if you want to become Billy Walters. You don't want to do time. But at the same time, you know, there's the plus side of all that. I'm going to take a chance here. I didn't rehearse this. What's your middle name?
Wright. W-R-I-G-H-T. Can you believe
it? This is beautiful. You can't spell Josh Wright Applebaum without the S-H-A-R-P. Ha-ha.
I love it. Can you make that ringtone, Ron?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, you'll dub that off the podcast, and you can use it to your heart's content. With Josh Applebaum and Ron Flatter, boy, I've got a lot of letters missing from sharp on my name. This has been the Everything Guide to Sports Betting on VSiN. Sharp, sharp.